Welcome to New Books in Political Science. My name is Heath Brown, and today I have the real pleasure of talking with Ravi Perry, who's the author of Black Mayors, White Majorities, The Balancing Act of Racial Politics. Ravi, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Heath. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have read the book. Before we get to it and all that you have to say in it, maybe you can just talk a little bit about yourself, where you are now, where you've been. Who are you?
Well, I guess I'm a man of many various hats, but quintessentially, for today's purpose, I'm a political scientist. I started out at the University of Michigan and got my PhD at Brown, and I was trained in American politics, public policy, and race and politics, and particularly in urban race and local politics. And I've been at two institutions. I started out at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts, and then I transitioned where I am now at Mississippi State University here in Starkville, Mississippi.
Great. And I could say that the book's published by University of Nebraska Press and available at their website if anyone wants to go out after they listen to the podcast, or if they want to stop now, go out and get the book and read it first, because it is a really interesting read. And let's talk about the book. And before we actually talk about some of your findings, I'd like to start by talking a little bit about expectations. You describe in the book the unique expectations imposed on black mayors. Would you describe a bit what the first generation of black mayors in the U.S. face? You mentioned Carl Stokes, Harold Washington, David Dinkins, and others. What was the nature of the expectations on them, and were these expectations different than other mayors that are elected in these kinds of mid-sized cities that you described?
I think that's a great question. And the short answer is that their expectations were extraordinarily high, and all of them said so, particularly Maynard Jackson and Nelson Maranto and Nick Nelson, who wrote the first major book on electing black mayors, indicated that as well in their survey of the first black mayors elected in their late 60s, early 70s. And the reason for that is simple. Prior to the ascendancy of African Americans to the mayorship in major cities throughout the United States, we did not have an opportunity that most blacks viewed as viable to take control of the direction of the city in terms of public policy outputs that benefited people of color. Even though these black mayors were elected at the time in cities that, for the most part, were a plurality of diversity, of diverse group members, some cases were still majority Caucasian in their voting population, they were able to successfully garner a large, significant proportion of course, the African-American vote, but also the white vote as well. But because of the timing in which they were elected, late 60s, early 70s, some even up to, say, for example, Harold Washington in 83 in Chicago, David Dinkins, 92 in New York as well, you had even up to that era from the late 60s to early 90s, for the most part, African-American mayors being elected in what were kind of the last bastion of majority white cities in the immediate post-civil rights movement era. And because of that era in which they were elected, there were high expectations that had the, since the prior Caucasian mayors, from many African-American residents' point of view, were non-responsive to their interests, it was, of course, reasonable for many African-Americans to have such a heightened sense of expectation for African-American mayors to adjust the attention to increase the amount of community response and to finally be able to feel as though they themselves are worthy of attention of political resources from City Hall now that African Americans, someone with their same shared racial identity, occupies the mayor's seat.
Now, you have a particular focus, and that focus is in the title of the book, Black Mayors, White Majorities. Why might we think that black mayors in white-majority cities would face a different governing challenge than those black mayors in black-majority cities? What's the dynamic that you really are probing in your book?
Well, the dynamic that I'm attempting to suggest there is that it is difficult to govern cities of multi ethnic and multiracial significant diversity. And because all of those individual communities have a cross-pollination of resources and ideas and interests and needs that they need to be attended to by the city. But for a large part, they have a lot of divergent views as well on some key matters. And so one thing that that title attests to is theoretical. And that is the first thing is that a lot of the research prior to this text in black politics, particularly about black mayors, has been regarding African-American mayors in majority African-American cities. And of course, for me, it was a very simple question. The question of, well, of course, we would expect black mayors of majority black cities to represent black interests because it's a simple numerical calculation. If they don't represent the interests of the majority of their constituents, then of course, then they're probably going to have a hard time staying in office or getting elected to begin with. But the question I had was, well, are not then African-Americans who happen to live in cities where they are still a substantive minority, are they not also just as worthy of receiving the types of support and engagement with a mayor with whom they share their same racial identity, even though that they are a minority in that said city? And I make a normative argument that, yes, they should. One, because they're the constituents, too. Two, because of what we know about linked fate and the notion of shared racial experience. We know that if you are a member of a said group that has a shared memory of oppression, then you're more likely to understand what it's like to be a member of that group in the present day. And so there's theoretical reasons why that title was chosen. And the secondary reason why the title was chosen was also because we do expect it to be difficult now that we are – this book focuses on really the 21st century, the beginning of the 21st century, and two mayors in particular, although I do argue it's generalizable to other mayors and similarly situated contexts throughout the country. And they are elected in different conditions than their African-American mayor predecessors in what we might call the first or second waves in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even early 90s. And so while the dynamics and the demographics might be the same, for example, African-American mayors elected in majority white cities, just as many were in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the context of those elections have changed. And what by that we mean that the voting population and the sophistication with which they determine who they want to be their representative in the mayor's office has changed significantly from what people were expecting of mayors generally in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and particularly of African-American mayors in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, so let's talk about your two mayors and your two cities in Ohio, two very different mayors, one with a big personality and some very interesting idiosyncrasies. Tell us a little bit about how you chose these two cities and the mayors that came to become elected in the 2000s.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. I was studying Ohio for two reasons. One, on full disclosure, I'm from Ohio. And so when you're a graduate student, you are attempting to gather research as expeditious and thorough as possible. And I knew that I could get a lot of data because of my contacts in the state of Ohio that otherwise is very difficult to get. So studying medium-sized cities in general as a political scientist is a rare phenomenon. Most of us study major cities. Or, frankly, we don't study cities at all, most American political scientists that study American politics. But those of us who do study cities, most of American political scientists study cities, study the large cities, and they study public opinion data, something like that. I was never interested in that. I mean, I was really interested, frankly, mainly as a scholar in what do these politicians do after they get elected? I was less interested in campaigns and elections than I was in governing. And I do fundamentally still believe and argue that that is a quintessential political science question. And political science, the discipline, has a lot of contributions they can make to that question. And so that led me to Ohio. And the reason was because I was witnessing the election of so many African-American mayors in basically every major city in Ohio, with the exception of Akron. And all of these cities were majority white cities. And so the question was just an interesting one for me. Well, how in the world are these people getting elected? And then the subsequent question for me was, well, what are they then doing for their minority constituents in those cities? And so I focused on Ohio because it is a interesting kind of anomaly in that nearly every major city elected an African-American mayor in the 21st century, from Cleveland to Toledo to Columbus to Cincinnati to Dayton. Those are the main cities, and they all had African-American mayors at one point at the same time. And that's pretty unique for an entire state, particularly a state that has a large, of course, import when it comes to national and presidential politics. And so I was interested in Ohio for that reason. And secondarily, because of the dearth of research, particularly recently, as it relates to people who happen to live in cities with a population of less than 500,000. As I was saying, that most of our research about people in those cities and the legislative and executive kind of makeup of those cities has been very, very limited. And we know very little about people who live in medium-sized cities, despite the fact that according to the United Nations data, we in fact have more people who live in cities of that size, not only in the United States, but worldwide, than people who live in larger cities.
Right. And so tell us about Mayor Ford and Mayor McClinn. What makes them unique? How did they get elected? Briefly.
So Mayor Ford was originally a city councilman from the city of Toledo, born and raised in Springfield, which is actually in the Dayton metropolitan region. And he went up to Toledo for law school, became active in the Toledo community, ran for city council, won, became city council president, then resigned and became the state representative for a largely black district. And then rose up the ranks in the 90s at the state house in Columbus and became the minority leader, was term limited out, and came back to Toledo and ran for mayor and won in 2001. And he won at a time in which the local county Democratic Party was in full support behind him, and they encouraged him to run, and he had all of the resources and support to do so. And he was successful in generating the coalition necessary to have a successful election, and particularly the immediate first few months of his governing. Ryan McGlynn also came from the state house in Columbus. She had been a state senator in the state house, the first African-American woman in that position as a state senator in Ohio. And she originally started out as a state rep, filling the seat of her longtime father, who was a longtime state rep for the largely minority community in Dayton. After his passing, she took over his seat. And then after she was term limited out of that, ran for state senate, won. And that was a much more diverse district. And as a result, I think she learned that she had a crossover appeal, as we might call it as political scientists. But she was term limited out of that seat and decided to run for mayor in the same time that Jack Ford did in Toledo. And she ran against a Republican opponent and won by a thin margin. But her broad coalition, particularly strong support in the African-American community, given her family's long standing support of the African-American community in the Dayton community, she won fairly handily as a result of the African-American support that she had there.
So use a couple of terms to kind of set up how you analyze these two mayors. Use the terms targeted universalism and the human relations approach. wonder if you could talk about these two terms and how they help us understand the way Mayors Ford and McClellan governed during their Ford's one term in office and McClellan's two terms in office.
Yes, I'd be happy to. So this book is essentially a reexamination of the deracialization theory, the idea that in order to get elected as a person of color in a diverse political jurisdiction, that you need to de-emphasize the significance of race. This is what theorists argued was necessary in the 70s, 80s, and 90s for African-American mayors. The gubernatorial candidate successfully in Douglas Wilder in Virginia in 89, and a whole host of other related races at the national level in Congress, so on and so forth. And the argument was this, that if African Americans in particular talked too explicitly about race, that they were not going to get elected, and therefore we'd never get to analyze any governing efforts. Well, I argued that the utility of utilizing that bifurcation, either you're racialized or deracialized, has been exhausted as a result of looking at mayors like Ford and McGlynn who are not running away from race but also aren't explicitly advocating it either. And I was eager to find a theory or develop a theory that would help me understand that. And so I developed a typology that helped us understand exactly what it means to represent black interests in the urban setting, which also had not been done. We really have no idea what black interests are at the local level, and I try my best to define that and to frame that in the typology thereof to suggest that should these mayors on a Likert scale 1 to 5, support certain initiatives that might be more symbolic, all the way to those that are more substantive, that have a targeted impact on the black community, that they would then be put in the appropriate categorization thereof. And that led to the theory of targeted universalism, which is borrowed from the legal field and legal scholarship, primarily that of John A. Powell, who's now at Berkeley, used to be at Ohio State, and the idea that he has argued in the legal context in terms of how it is we can effectively represent the interests of everyone while also tending to the needs of the particular, of the targeted groups, of marginalized, the disillusioned populations, those that are perhaps disenfranchised as well. And I was very attracted to that theory, and I decided to apply it to the local mayoral governing context and using these two mayors as my case studies. And essentially it worked. And what we were able to show is that, yes, it actually is possible to talk about race, make it a public policy priority, and to convince whites that what's in the interest of African Americans and these two mayors' cases is also in the interest of them as well, and that any attention the mayor might give to the needs of the less fortunate is not somehow given at the expense of the needs of the majority population. And that is a departure from where the theory suggested was possible for elected officials to do in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s.
Yeah, and I think it's a really compelling theory, and you have a very interesting case study method in order to explain how this theory actually works. Without going too much into the exact findings, I wonder, where do we go from here? What might mayors running for office do with your findings, be they black candidates in white majority cities or otherwise? How do we take from this your academic book and try to make sense of it in the practical politics of governing? Black mayors have increased in their success in winning elections. Are there recommendations that come out of this book that you would say these are ways in which to govern that the findings of the book support or refute?
Well, one recommendation I would offer is that should a candidate be tempted to run a deracialized campaign because they believe it's necessary in order to appeal to what we call crossover voters, to mainly whites, what we find is that there's significant backlash actually in the black community or the Latino community, whatever the subgroup population might be, in that they feel as though then you are detaching yourself from that community. And so while you might gain white voters, you actually might lose the minority support that you are essentially banking on by being deracialized, because voters in totality now are more sophisticated, and they're not just electing a black person or Latino simply because of their shared racial identity anymore, and that they're choosing for them what is the quote unquote perhaps best candidate, and that means that those who choose the deracialization kind of premise as their model for how to run a campaign in an effort to seek white votes might actually lose significant support in the minority community, and we've seen examples where that has actually led to failure in their election bids, not to the success that they predicted. Not because minorities are expecting racially explicit language to be part of the public policy pronouncements given by mayoral candidates, but that they are expecting at least to feel recognized and to feel heard, and the deracialization premise doesn't allow them to do so. That's one recommendation I would make, and the positive recommendation I would make would be that it is possible to talk about the issues affecting particular racial and ethnic groups, predominantly so, disproportionately so, in your said community, and do so in a way that does not make whites feel threatened. And what you can learn from are from some of the rhetorical kind of suasion, so to speak, or what we might call the moral suasion that these mayors implemented in order to convince a large, a sizable portion of the majority community that what's in the interest of people of color is in the interest of them as well. And the result being that if you can, in fact, universalize the interest of blacks in this case, in a way that makes those interests matter to all constituents. That largely occurs through rhetoric and strategic framing of one's public policy pronouncements to ensure that it has a targeted benefit to those who need it, but also makes whites and others feel included in the process in lifting the city up in its entirety.
Yeah, this is a very timely and just very interesting book, I think, for political science scholars, but public administration scholars, I think, could learn a lot. There's just a number of really interesting contributions that you've made here. Robbie's book, Black Mayors, White Majorities, The Balancing Act of Racial Politics, was published in 2013 by University of Nebraska Press. It's available at their website to buy. Robbie, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Heath.